Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, May 16th, 2021. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Innovia Community Foundation in Spokane says it wants to pay the tuition for every college student in the Inland Northwest. Idaho is 51st in education funding, remaining at the bottom of the barrel in per-pupil spending. Judge rules Bonneville County Republican Party must stop endorsing candidates in the primary, and bans off our bodies rally in Moscow attracts 285 people, and local Nez Perce confronts racists demonstrating in Moscow. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Spokane-based Innovia Community Foundation said today it will launch a plan to raise $150 million to pay for every motivated student in the Inland Northwest to go to college or vocational training. Innovia plans to raise the money in the next 15 months by working with community, government, and private partners. The spokesman review reports Spokane County commissioners have already allocated $5 million, and U.S. Senator Patty Murray has worked to make sure the initiative gets $2.5 million in congressionally directed funds. The program is called Launch Northwest. Innovia CEO Shelley O'Quinn issued a statement today saying, "The vision of Launch Northwest is to advance opportunity, prosperity, and growth in our region. This bold investment in our community will provide hope and opportunity for students and families today." Launch Northwest will be similar to successful initiatives in cities such as Buffalo, Cleveland, and other cities. The Buffalo initiative, called Say Yes to Education Buffalo, will be the model for Launch Northwest. Innovia serves 20 counties in the Inland Northwest. 40% of high school graduates in the region move on to college or vocational education. A community advisory board made up of elected officials, schools officials, nonprofits, and business leaders will join with a community leadership council and a community action council to direct the initiative. The National Education Association has released a report which shows Idaho ranks 51st in the nation in education spending per pupil. Idaho has been near the bottom of the list of the 50 states plus District of Columbia for years. The report says Idaho spent $8,376 per pupil in fiscal year 2021, while the national average is $14,360. Reclaim Idaho is seeking to change that. They have put an initiative on the November ballot that would increase the income tax the wealthiest Idahoans pay. Under the plan, Idahoans whose income exceeds $250,000 per year for an individual or $500,000 for a couple would pay increased income tax, and that would raise $323 million per year for education. The initiative would also increase the corporate income tax rate to 8% to help fund education. Reacting to the National Education Association tally, Reclaim Idaho co-founder Luke Mayville told the Idaho Press, "We've long known that Idaho is far behind other states in funding for education. Even some of the recent increases in education spending are not enough for us to catch up with neighboring states." Teacher pay in Idaho is 45th in the nation, although the legislature has increased average starting salaries for teachers in recent years. The average starting salary is now $39,843, which is 29th in the nation. Although the Idaho legislature killed two versions of a non-binding resolution to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Sawtooth National Recreation Area, there will be some activity on the anniversary. The Andrus Center for Public Policy, based in Boise, will hold a virtual conference on the recreation area on Tuesday of next week, May 24th. The city councils of Stanley and Sun Valley have passed resolutions praising the recreation area. The Stanley City Resolution celebrates establishment of the Sawtooth Recreation Area, quote, along with the enduring legacy of recreation opportunities and environmental protection that it provided for the residents of Stanley and the people of Idaho and the nation. During this legislative session, the Idaho House killed two versions of the bill. The Senate passed a version of the resolution, lost by a 51-18 vote, after Republican Representative Judy Boyle of Midvale objected to wording that she said would open the door to supporting additional land use designations in the state. And Republican Representative Heather Scott of Blanchard said these little resolutions have agendas behind them many times. Democratic Representative Ned Burns of Bellevue drafted a new version that removed the wording that Boyle objected to. And he mentioned to the House that the Sawtooth National Recreation Area has 700 miles of trails, 40 10,000-foot peaks, and more than 300 high mountain lakes. But that version, called HCR 51, failed in the House on a 45-22 vote. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. We'll be back in a minute with more of the Evening Report.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
Fourth District Judge Jason Scott issued a preliminary injunction Friday banning the Bonneville County Republican Central Committee from endorsing or sending money to specific Republican Party candidates and not others. Idaho Republican Party Chair Tom Luna filed the lawsuit Thursday, saying the Central Committee was masquerading as the Idaho Republican Party in publications endorsing certain candidates on a sample ballot, which they distributed, which said "the official Republican Party" on the top. Judge Scott wrote the Central Committee's, quote, "illegal conduct, therefore, not only fundamentally undermines the electoral process, it ultimately risks reducing the quality and effectiveness of government." The candidates the Bonneville Republican Party Central Committee endorsed on their sample ballot and sent campaign contributions to are all from the far-right branch of the Republican Party. The county party donated $1,000 to Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan, who is challenging Brad Little for governor in next Tuesday's primary. Idaho 3% militia leader Todd Engel has endorsed McGeehan. Engel is a convicted felon on charges based on his role in the armed standoff at the ranch of Clive and Bundy in Nevada in 2014. He spent 4 years in prison on that and then joined Clive and Bundy's son, Eamon Bundy, in the armed takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in Central Oregon in 2016. According to the Idaho Bulletin, which is a partisan website that supports more moderate Republicans, on April 1st, Engel appeared with McGeehan at an event at the ranch of Idaho Freedom Foundation board chair Brett Regan in Kootenai County. Engel is running for the Idaho House in District 1. Instead of using the usual contingent of Idaho State Police for security in her run for governor, McGeehan is using paramilitary leaders, who retired law enforcement officers say she is treating as personal bodyguards. The Bonneville County Republican Party Central Committee also donated $5,000 each to Lieutenant Governor candidate Representative Priscilla Giddings of Whitebird. Secretary of State candidate Representative Dorothy Moon of Stanley and Superintendent of Public Instruction candidate Brandon Durst. Durst has the endorsement of the Idaho Freedom Foundation, which has found some success getting the state legislature to reduce funding to universities on the grounds they are supposedly indoctrinating students on social justice and critical race theory. Moon this year introduced numerous bills intent on overhauling Idaho elections, including through voter suppression, such as removal of ballot drop boxes and banning student photo IDs as identification for voting. Another Republican in the Secretary of State's race, Senator Mary Souza of Coeur d'Alene, has introduced similar bills. Both Moon and Souza are running against Ada County Clerk Phil McGrain in the Republican primary. Moon has the endorsement of the Idaho Freedom Foundation. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month. As part of that, groups in Idaho are using Hope Week to help kids in crisis and reduce the state's worrying number of child suicides. Gene Muchie is president of the Idaho Resilience Project and a community health manager at St. Luke's Health System. She says the project and Optum Idaho are teaming up to promote positive moments for kids, which can ease adverse experiences. Muchie says Optum Idaho is distributing 20,000 kites across the state to get them outside and playing.
We're really focusing on kites, bikes, and hikes, so really encouraging people to get outside with somebody else and engage in a positive activity.
HOPE stands for Healthy Outcomes for Positive Experiences, and the theme for this year's Hope Week is Hope Lives Here. Muchie says there are a lot of ways to promote the mental well-being of children. She says connections with an adult who is not a family member can help protect their state of mind.
And if you ask a lot of kids, they can't identify a trusted adult who's not part of their family. And so if that one non-family member who is that trusted adult in a child's life can make an enormous difference, and data back that up.
COVID-19 has taken a big toll and raising concerns about the number of Idaho children in crisis. Recent surveys show as many as three-quarters of respondents thought the pandemic had worsened mental health in the state, and a huge majority say addressing children's mental health is an especially urgent priority. Muchie says one key is that people should feel like they can ask for help.
Really encourage people to seek help, destigmatize, understand that it's okay to not be okay, and it's really okay to reach out to somebody, and also encourage other people to start to build connection and support to really combat isolation and some of the lack of connection that we faced during COVID.
The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255 takes calls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
More than 1,000 people rallied in Spokane's Riverfront Park Saturday evening to protest the impending overturning of Roe v. Wade in one of hundreds of Bans Off Our Bodies rallies across the nation. Thousands rallied for abortion rights at the Idaho State Capitol in Boise Saturday, according to the Idaho Press. The planned Supreme Court ruling is expected to have the most extreme effects on women's agency in rural right-wing states such as Idaho. Idaho lawmakers in 2020 passed a trigger law making it a felony to perform an abortion. This year, they passed a law that would allow judges to award $20,000 to the relatives of a zygote or fetus, including grandparents and siblings, that is aborted after 6 weeks. The money would come from the abortion doctor. That law, which is currently under constitutional challenge at the state Supreme Court, also allows the relatives of a rapist to sue the abortion doctor. It includes an exemption disallowing a rapist to sue, but only if there is a police report. Idaho State Director for Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates Misty Delicarpini-Tolman said, "We are at a crisis moment for abortion rights. We are furious, and we are ready to fight back with you all." At least 285 people were on hand for the Bans Off Our Bodies rally in East City Park Saturday afternoon in Moscow, one of hundreds of pro-choice rallies taking aim at the leaked Trump Supreme Court decision indicating the court is planning to reverse Roe v. Wade next month after 50 years of women's health care rights. An underlying theme in the protests is that abortion is statistically safer than the risks involved in carrying a baby to term. Many states' trigger laws don't make exceptions for when the life of the mother is in danger, and even when they do, it's sometimes difficult to determine when the mother's life is in danger until it's too late. So-called back-alley abortions have never been safe, as illustrated by this rather graphic story. One of the speakers at the Moscow rally on Saturday afternoon, historian Rebecca Schofield, introduced her mother to the audience, who told this story.
Okay, so in the fall of 1975, I registered as a freshman at Boise State University. I was 18. I became friends with a 17-year-old fellow student. We shared classes, and we had a group of friends that we hung out with. Before Christmas break, she came to me asking for a favor. She asked if I would drive her to Ontario, Oregon, for a doctor's appointment because she was afraid that she would be unable to drive herself home. I just said, sure, you know, why not? So she asked me to come pick her up late on a Friday afternoon, and we had an enjoyable drive. We chatted, you know, as you do, about college things, classes, the boys, and our love of music. She was really, really nervous, and she finally told me she was actually going for an abortion. As she was only 17, she felt this was her only option was... I'm so sorry. As she was only 17, she couldn't get one in Idaho without her parents' permission. She had a street address where we went, and we were brought in through a side garage door. I was doing my best to be supportive, but told her several times that we should leave. She again insisted that this was her only option, and she handed them a large amount of cash. We were taken into a back room where one person appeared to be an anesthesiologist and the other was a doctor. He sat with a tray of medical instruments. I sat and held her hand during the entire procedure, but something went wrong. There was so much blood. All of a sudden, the attendant said, "She's gone." Her hand was limp in mine, but I had simply thought she had passed out. The doctor checked her pulse, then grabbed a few things and ran from the room, his attendant following him. I'm running after them screaming, "Please stop, help her, help her." I didn't know what to do, so I called the police, and they arrived very quickly along with the ambulance. But we could do nothing to save her. It was a very long night of answering questions, trying to describe the two men, and just asking why. Why? I didn't understand. Eventually, the two men were found and brought to trial. I needed to testify, and they were found guilty and sent to prison. But the hardest part was talking to her parents, trying to explain to them that she felt that this was her only way out, and she just didn't want to embarrass them. She just didn't want to disappoint them. We had both hoped that it would be okay. It wasn't okay then, and it's still not okay. It's been 47 years, and this is the first time I've talked about this. Even though Roe versus Wade had been passed into law, getting an abortion in Idaho if you're underage was impossible. It put many people into dangerous situations where many lost the ability to have children later, and some died in those backroom abortions. All who have endured suffer and still carry those scars. I speak here today because we must share our truth. We must stand together to fight this injustice. I fear for my grandchildren. I fear for their rights. We cannot go backwards. Our body, our choice for safe and legal abortions. Thank you.
That was the mother of Rebecca Schofield speaking at the Moscow Bans Off Our Bodies rally Saturday afternoon. Although the story comes from 1975 after Roe v. Wade, abortion was not readily available in many areas at that time, and Idaho teens needed their parents' permission to get an abortion. Two protesters with White Lives Matter signs stood on the corner of Perimeter Drive and the Pullman Highway Friday afternoon in Moscow, and Gary Dorr of Moscow, who is Nimipu, confronted them.
This is Moscow, Idaho. It's great to be white. What the hell is that? But apparently not enough pride to show their faces.
So,
what's
help
these
you?
Guys?
I don't know.
What does it say?
It's White Lives Matter. That's what that WLM, their website is, White Lives Matter.
Oh, I see.
All this pride, but they can't show their face. So we're going to go see what these guys have to say about their pride. So you got all this pride and you got to hide your face, huh?
Yep.
Huh?
Yep.
You got to hide your face, huh?
Yep.
How come?
Just
where's all this pride? Why don't you show your face?
Standing up for ourselves.
Huh?
We could lose our jobs just so we're standing up for ourselves, our own race.
But you're too scared to show your face?
Well, yeah, I mean, I like being employed.
What?
You can't have controversial opinions and be employed.
You can't be employed with that kind of opinion. What does that say about you? What does that say about your position?
It's unpopular.
Huh?
It's unpopular.
Yeah. And that doesn't bother you in the least bit?
No.
Where's your moral authority, dude?
Where's yours?
Huh?
Where's yours?
I was born with it.
Me too.
This is my land. I was born here. I've always been here.
Me too.
No. Your people weren't here. Your people didn't start here.
I was locked up in prison, bro, and that's this wrong.
No pride, huh? No pride at all. You wear that flag? I fought for that flag.
I rolled with the woods, bro. I rolled with the woods in prison, and that's this wrong. Because it's all or nothing, bro. All or nothing. Everybody or nobody.
Say anything against any other race.
Everybody or nobody.
Yeah, I hope for you. You feel it's great to be Native American.
I'm Native, bro. I'm 70% Native. Just because I got white skin don't mean I don't know my own background. And that's some wrong ambition. See this shaved head? That's the wrong ambition.
You got no pride whatsoever, dude. No pride. You're a coward. And you're a coward.
That was Gary Dorr confronting two White Lives Matter protesters holding signs at Perimeter Drive and State Highway 8 Friday afternoon in Moscow. Dorr mentioned the pair were in Lewiston the day before doing the same protest.
An initiative that would repeal Washington's capital gains tax on the state's richest residents is struggling to gain traction. I-1929 would eliminate a 7% tax on stocks, bonds, and other assets worth more than $250,000, which lawmakers approved in the 2021 session. It's projected to bring in $450 million for child care and education if it goes into effect in 2023. Aaron Ostrom with the progressive organization Fuse Washington says it would only be levied on a small number of people.
These are people who own yachts and are looking to buy a second yacht. This is not just rich people. This is the ultra wealthy who are looking to further rig a system that's already rigged in their favor at the expense of child care and early childhood education.
Supporters of I-1929 argued that the tax passed by the state legislature last year is an income tax, which is unconstitutional in Washington state. A judge agreed in March and overturned the measure lawmakers passed last year. Attorney General Bob Ferguson is appealing that decision to the Washington Supreme Court. Organizers of I-1929 have until July 8th to collect about 325,000 signatures. Ostrom says they are far behind and have not even reached $1 million in donations for the campaign.
The longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. So they would probably have to pay over $10 million to get on the ballot at this point, and they're not raising funds that are anywhere near that neighborhood, and they're not showing any signs of actually starting to move into signature gathering.
Ostrom disagrees that the capital gains tax passed by lawmakers qualifies as an income tax.
It's a tax on extraordinary capital gains for a tiny number of ultra-wealthy people. And Wall Street speculation is not the same thing as earning income.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Moscow City Council tonight will vote on a one-year license agreement with Bird Rides for the operation of up to 200 shared-use scooters in the city. The council will also vote on approving a sanitation rate study update. The city's sanitation department is using FCS Group consultants to conduct rate studies to periodically assure costs of services are in alignment with the revenue needs of the utility and that those costs are allocated in as equitable a manner as possible among the utility customer classes. The City Council will also hear a presentation on the Palouse Knowledge Corridor from Palouse Knowledge Corridor Executive Director Richard French. The Knowledge Corridor is a regional economic development organization with a commitment to developing Palouse-based activities that bring expertise and talent from other regional universities to engage with the local community. The council will also hear a report on the Fire Department's Insurance Services Office rating from Fire Chief Brian Nickerson. The Moscow City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall.
Oregonians are casting their ballots for Tuesday's primary election. One issue affecting many voters is access to child care. Courtney Hellstein with the organization Family Forward Oregon says child care affordability was a problem before COVID-19, and the pandemic has only exacerbated it. She says women, particularly women of color, have felt the disproportionate impact of care costs and accessibility. Hellstein says the cost means some have to make tough decisions.
The result of all these high costs is that too many families are actually forced to choose between childcare, between meals, between other basic necessities. And they're also having to weigh the financial costs of, is it actually more cost effective for me and my family for me to not work?
Hellstein says demand has never been higher for child care, but workers in the field are among the lowest paid in the country. She says there have been some successes in the Oregon legislature, including investments in early childhood learning and community-led pilot projects. Matt Newell Chang with the nonpartisan nonprofit Oregon Food Bank says access to child care is a hunger issue. The food bank surveyed candidates for governor about food insecurity, and their responses are posted on its website. Newell Ching says there's a question about child care because Oregon Food Bank believes it will continue to be an issue for Oregon families.
Whoever the next governor is, we believe it's critical that we as a state come together to ensure kids have a safe place to be while parents are working, because it impacts every community's ability to rebuild and thrive.
Hellstein says we need to look at child care differently.
We're seeing the beginning of this culture shift across the country, but definitely in the state of Oregon, of really starting to reframe access to child care from kind of like a personal problem to a societal problem, to a community benefit.
The deadline to vote in Oregon's primary is Tuesday. Drop sites for ballots will be open until 8 p.m. This is the third in a four-part series about hunger ahead of Tuesday's primary. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear, low 38. West winds 5 to 10, becoming light southwest after midnight. Gusts up to 20. Sunny tomorrow, high 59. Increasing clouds Tuesday night, low 42. And then a 40% chance of rain on Wednesday. Chance of rain between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. And then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Mostly cloudy, high 58. Breezy, east winds 5 to 10, becoming west 15 to 20 in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 35 miles per hour. Current temperature 61. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can find out more ways to help KRFP at the KRFP.org website. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Coming up next, Eat the Airwaves Part 2, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at 7:30. Zach Dunoir is on to play music for you, 7:30 to 9. And then at 9 o'clock, more music with Chia Pet on the air. And at 11 o'clock, we'll have the World Music Show, Motherland Influence, coming up 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. So stay tuned. Entertainment, music, and information throughout the evening here at KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is supported in part by Idaho AFL-CIO, dedicated to representing the interests of working people at the state and local level.
KRFP is also sponsored by the Palouse Folklore Society, celebrating traditional music and dance on the Palouse since 1982. The Palouse Folklore Society sponsors concerts, jam sessions, and a monthly contra dance. Find out more at palousefolk.org or on Facebook.